You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
One day I understand. One day, go see the baby be born and come back. You're a Major League Baseball player.
Did I not tell you?
Yes, you did.
See, don't answer. These are rhetorical questions because you know I told you and you know I'm not.
Analytics don't work at all. They're just a crap to some people who were really smart made up to try to get in the game because they had no talent.
This kid is a gamer. He's a follower. He's a playmaker and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got T-Bone. He shattered the mold and all he does is win. All he does is win.
Hello and welcome to Hot Takedown, 538's podcast about the week in sports narratives. I'm Chadwick Matlin, an editor for 538. And with me in the studio, the mainstays, Kate Fagan, Neil Payne, Kate, ESPNW columnist. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Chad.
Neil Payne, 538 sports writer. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Chad.
How you guys doing?
Good. Life is really good.
Life is so good because the listeners are hearing us.
Yep.
From, it's not the great beyond. What is it
it's
when we're...
It's a form of time travel.
Yeah.
I think.
From the future.
From Montana.
I'm on vacation in Montana as I speak to you, except in New York as I speak to you, but we don't need to get
into
that.
I'm in Texas.
You're in Texas, right? Neil, where are you? Are you stuck
here
again?
I'm in New York. I'm still in New York.
But listeners, that's good news because that means the return of Stat School. Neil, run us through Stat School. Since you are the stat man, the professor of Stat School, long-time listeners, short-time listeners, actually, we did this a couple of months ago. Long-time listeners will remember that we've done one Stat School already about batting metrics and stats in the majors. What do we cover in that?
So in that one, we talked about the evolution of how to evaluate hitters from batting average, which was deemed to be hopelessly antiquated, to OPS, which stands for on-base plus slugging percentage, which is a step up, but still not as good as we could get. And then finally to what we eventually, what we said, work plus, is that how we're pronouncing
and
it?
And then a lot of people chimed in how to actually pronounce it.
Yeah, right. And the consensus seemed to be work plus, which stands for WRC plus, which is a measure of how many runs a player creates.
Weighted runs.
Weighted, even. Yes, weighted, and the plus means that it's adjusted for park and league factors. And right now you can find that stat at Fangraphs, where you can find most of the stats, in fact, all the stats we'll talk about today, too.
So the point of this is for Kate and I to understand.
Get educated.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Or rather to increase our knowledge base.
That's fair.
And make sense of a very complicated world of advanced metrics and how they might be able to better inform our understanding and analysis of the games, of the sports that we love to watch. And so Neil is Professor Statman. Kate and I are his willing pupils. Mm-hmm. Neil, what are we going to cover today?
So today we're going to talk about pitching stats, and we're kind of going to go through the same evolution that we did with hitting stats, where we're going to start by talking about the most basic level of stats and then kind of increase the difficulty, perhaps, but also...
Don't spoil where we're going.
Sure.
Just tell me what the path is, you know?
So the path is from stats that measured how much the pitcher had the will to win to how much they actually stopped the other team from scoring, which is kind of the pitcher's job, to also ones that take into account that how much control the pitchers have over things like hits when they give up a ball in play.
Okay, and before we get into the actual stats, last time around with batting, we had a mule, and he was Nolan Arenado, the Rockies' third baseman. He transported all of our gear, even us sometimes when we were tired. We just didn't know if we could make it to the end of the lesson.
He was our Sherpa.
He was our mule. the Sherpa was on the mule, I suppose.
Yeah.
The Sherpas ride mules? They drag mules. So that means someone else was
Depends
the Sherpa.
Depends on the Sherpa, really.
Yeah, okay, fine.
We've tortured this metaphor.
Okay, good. So anyway, who is our mule and or Sherpa today?
Yeah, so today we're going to focus on a guy named Drew Hutchison. He's a pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. In fact, he actually got demoted to the minor leagues yesterday, so he's not currently on the Blue Jays. But we're going to use him as an example of someone whose stats in the three categories we're covering are wildly different from each other, and your opinion of him would be wildly different depending on which number that you looked at.
Okay, so let's go to the intro. Kate, are you ready? Do you have pencil in hand?
Mm-hmm.
Video watchers,
I have my
don't see that,
iPhone recorder on so that I can listen to this later.
Ooh, like
as
a MOOC.
I fall asleep.
Yeah, we should do these MOOCs, guys. There's 538's new revenue stream, distributed education around stats. Okay, so our first pitching 101, basically intro level course. Neil, what stat is it?
So the most basic level upon which a pitcher could be evaluated, and kind of sadly, it was still very, I mean, among a certain portion of the fans and analysts out there, it's still used somewhat commonly, but much less so than it was even 10 years ago, is a pitcher's win-loss record. Mm-hmm. Which assigns,
I've heard of it.
Yes, you've heard of this one. You might have remembered it. It assigns.
So Neil, let me interrupt you there. I feel like I still hear about 20 game winners as like a thing that pitchers are supposed to want to be. That if you are a 20 game winner, that means you're a really excellent pitcher. But you're telling me that it's possible to be an excellent pitcher without being a 20 game winner.
Yeah, the two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. You can be a 20 game winner and be really good. You can also be a 20 win pitcher and not be as good as someone who only won, you know, 12 games. And in recent years, there have been Cy Youngs that were given to pitchers that only won, you know, somewhere between 10 to 15 games, even if there were other guys that had more wins that in the past probably would have won the award.
Why heard you sort of allude to this at the top when you said the will to win, as if the part of the reason we ascribed the win-loss was that pitchers who just wanted it more somehow would end up with more wins. I think that belief in a lot of like young baseball fans, you still correlate the two. Like a win-loss record somehow measures like the grit of a pitcher.
Yeah, I think that was the original intent of the stat, especially when you think about when they first started tracking it, which was in like the 1870s or perhaps even before Major League Baseball even started. Pitchers were not really designed to ever leave the game once they started the game, unless they were pitching awful and they had to be taken out. But typically you started the game and you pitched a complete game, and so the win really like belonged to you in a certain sense. Like you were the pitcher of record in the game and you got the team result.
What other stats came along? I know after we'll go through. At the time when win-loss was the main one, did they measure pitchers in any other way at that time?
Yeah, they kept track of how many runs you gave up. And yeah, we'll touch on that later. And they kept track of even like strikeouts and walks, especially as you move into the 20th century. But there was still the sense that a 20-game winner, or in the case of Old Hoss Radburn, a 50-game winner.
Can we pause? Old Hoss Radburn?
Yeah, so there's a
man's name was Old Hoss? Hoss?
Well, is he German? That was a nickname.
Old Hoss.
So Old Hoss, I guess, stood for a horse. His name was Charlie Radburn, and he has the all-time single-season record for wins in a year, which
and
I
his Wikipedia page is just brilliant.
Then. Yeah, it's amazing. In 1884, he had 60 wins. Against
whoa.
12 losses.
He had a lot of will to win.
How many Tommy John surgeries did he have?
Yeah, who knows? Now, there's actually some discrepancies depending on which source that you look at. Sometimes they credit him with 59.
I'm going to trust that Old Hoss had 62. It's fine.
But Old Hoss definitely had a lot of wins in 1884.
So, but part of the point is in the modern game, obviously pitchers don't finish what they start, but also the way we measure wins is based on whether they had the lead when they left the game, whether their team had the lead when they left the game. And so run support factors in pretty heavily to this. So you could have hard luck losers in the majors a lot because, let's say, I don't know, a team has three great young starters and no offense.
Hitting.
Yeah. And so maybe, maybe those young starters just wouldn't have a lot of wins in their account.
I don't know what team that we're talking about, Chad, right now. But
Metropolitan team.
Right, yes. That is kind of the biggest complaint about wins and losses and assigning them to the pitcher is that, first of all, the pitcher is not the totality of the team and that there is this whole other side where you have to actually score runs in order to win. And not every pitcher on the same team, much less across teams, gets the same level of run support in terms of, you know, how many runs his offense scores for him when he starts games. And that can have a huge impact on the quality of a pitcher's record that he has no control over whatsoever.
Okay, let's go to our mule.
Sherpa.
What does Sherpa? Yeah. Is mule...
Isn't it offensive? Defamator? I don't know.
Yeah. Seems a little offensive.
Okay.
Let's just go to Sherpa.
Let's go to our Sherpa. What does our Sherpa... Drew Hutchison have to tell us about wins.
Yeah, so Hutchison's record in the 2015 season is 12-2, which is
and he got demoted.
Yeah,
his will to win.
Yeah.
He had a great will to win, and he got the, that's awful. What were the Blue Jays thinking?
I know. What were they thinking? So, yeah, well, one of the things is that, you know, there's this idea that a pitcher can really impose his will to win by pitching to the score. So he would allow more runs in games in which his team has already scored runs because he's just trying to get outs. He's pitching to contact. He's, you know, trying to get out of the game as fast as possible and, I don't know, make a dinner date. I don't know what the rationale is for that. But there have been a lot of studies that show that basically that's just BS. That's not true. No pitcher has a consistent pattern of pitching to the score. And so when you see Hutchinson, he's 12-2, but he also has allowed a lot of runs, the type of runs that you would not expect his record to be 12-2. You would expect it to actually be below
500. And part of the reason why it is
12-2
is we talked about the Blue Jays, I think, one or two weeks ago on the show, or at least earlier this month.
The run support there.
And they have a great offense, and the run differential is super high. And so can you pull up his run support? Is that in front of you?
Yeah, so Hutchinson, per nine innings, he is getting 7.7 runs of support, whoa, according to FanGraphs, by the Blue Jays offense, which again is a fantastic hitting
and
offense.
And that's just a random thing, right? That it's allowed
him to
get 12
wins. How does
that
compare against the other Blue Jays pitchers?
Yeah, so
is he actually just luck-wise getting an extra run a game when he pitches?
Yeah, I mean, he is getting, the Blue Jays themselves are averaging, you know, well into the fives of runs per game. So, you know, they're among the highest run scoring teams in baseball in general, but even compared to other pitchers on his same staff, he's getting a lot of runs. And then also, if you look at some of the other guys that have worse records, your friend Bartolo Colon of the Mets, the Mets only score 3.7 runs per nine innings
when he
is pitching. So you can see how between the two pitchers, it's not really a fair comparison to look, especially since they have similar rates of runs allowed, which we'll talk about later, per nine innings, that the one loss record is almost totally dependent on, in addition to the guy's own pitching ability, on how many runs his team scores for him.
Okay, Kate, are you feeling good with the basics? I'm feeling good.
I feel good about this win-loss.
Okay, so, Statman, I think if you feel comfortable giving us the certificate and the stamp of approval, we're ready for phase two.
Yeah, I'll rubber stamp you into the second phase.
Okay, great. Second phase, what is it?
So the second stat we're going to talk about is earned run average, or ERA.
Good.
Again, I bet both of you have heard of it, and that's something where it's a little bit different than what we did in the batting segment of Stat School, where we talked about OPS, which was something that really no one had tried to add on base and slugging percentage together until maybe like the 40s or the 50s or maybe even later than that. Whereas earned run average was around pretty soon in the evolution of baseball. I don't know if it came around exactly when the concept of assigning starters wins and losses came around in the 1870s, but the concept of, well, we recognize in wins and losses that it's kind of flawed. There's this run support issue. A pitcher's job is to not give up runs, not necessarily not give up runs, plus have his offense score a lot of runs behind him. And so a measure that was more gradually accepted as kind of the true quality of a pitcher is ERA. And you still see that referenced as being almost like the primary metric or gauge of how a pitcher is performing.
So when I was a kid, I could have told you pitchers' ERAs right off the top of my head. It felt like a really understandable number, though I still remember there's some formula where you have to add up to 32 and divide by 9 or something. Am I making this
up?
Yeah,
well, because it's runs per nine innings.
Sure. But the point is that I remember thinking it was really radical that a pitcher's ERA was different than just the average number of runs that he allowed while he was pitching. And that, as an 8-year-old, was really thrilling. But I understand now why you standardize it to 9 innings, whatever. But that still seems like a pretty comfortable metric to me. The dope sports analytics podcast host.
Yeah, I mean, compared to wins and losses, I think the leap to actually looking at how well the pitcher is conceivably doing his job is a huge leap. And you get so much more about a pitcher from knowing just how many runs he allows than you do just by looking at how well the team performed when he was the starter of record.
If I could make an observation, though.
Sure.
When we did Stat School last time, the metrics for hitters seemed like really, really advanced. Even in phase two, we were dissecting a lot of different things and like nuances that they're trying to apply. Is it that the pitching metrics, right, like in the beginning and that we're still sort of trying to understand how to even gauge a pitcher?
Yeah, I think it says something about the evolution of pitching stats in general that they, for the longest time, if you knew a pitcher's one loss record, but especially if you knew his ERA, then you basically knew what there was to know about him. And it was acknowledged also that pitchers were, they seemed really random from year to year, that like, well, you know, you might have a pitcher have like a 2.5 ERA 1 year, but then it would balloon to like 3.9 the next year. And it was, you know, kind of like a collective shrug of like, yeah, what are you going to do? Pitchers are crazy. You know, Bill James, when he was doing projections, and he was doing this in the Baseball Abstracts of like the 1980s, he wouldn't even project pitcher performance. So he had like this crazy levels of like advanced systems to project.
Bill James,
hitters.
We should say, is the sort of
the godfather of sabermetrics.
Yeah. He's the Ken Palm of baseball. Yeah.
Ken Palm is the hymn of college basketball. But so when it came to pitchers, the guy who basically invented sabermetrics just kind of like threw up his hands and was like, well, you know, they're crazy. There's nothing that you really need to know about them beyond their ERA, and that's kind of where we'll leave it.
Well, when things are like rudimentary, I guess, and if it's all it's about dollars for pitchers and they know that they're being judged on these statistics that maybe aren't capturing everything. Are they pitch? Do you think that there was any instance of like pitching differently? Because you'll see, like in basketball, sometimes guys won't want to take end of quarter shots,
right,
because it affects their
shooting
percentage, and like all of these stats matter. In baseball, was it like, well, giving up a run would impact ERA versus like giving up a hit didn't matter? I mean, I guess it's like it's hard to actually know how what pitchers were thinking, but. If you can get at my question.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that because one of the benefits of ERA is that, like, your job ultimately is to prevent runs from scoring. So, like, the team's interest is aligned with your interest as a player. So you're not going to run into those cases where, like, there's a moral hazard, involved with, like, the player trying to be selfish. But you do run into, I mean, there's that word earned in earned run average, and there's a very convoluted system for determining what runs are actually earned, in which the scorekeeper, first of all, makes a decision of about errors. Errors are fielding mistakes, and when baseball was in its infancy, the players would wear very, you know, if they wore gloves at all, they wore very rudimentary gloves, and errors happened all the time. And so they had this sense of fairness where they were saying the pitcher shouldn't be held accountable if there's an error made behind him, and errors are getting made all the time in the game the way it was played back then. So we need to find a way to sort of not blame the pitcher for the runs that were allowed as a result of errors. And what they did was they would, the scorekeeper, first of all, would decide whether a play could have been made with like a normal effort by a fielder. And if not, then it should have, you know, it counts against the pitcher. But if it could have been made with a normal effort, then it counts as an error. And then you say, okay, well, as the inning progresses after this, there's a base runner who's on, but he shouldn't have been on otherwise, but if this fielder hadn't made this error. So the scorekeeper had to actually reconstruct the inning as though there was no error. So you basically treat that error as an out, and then once you get out of the inning, even if you allow runs after what would have been the third out in this other alternate universe, then like those don't count against you because they're unearned runs. And it's a very strange, like, hypothetical alternate universe approach.
So what stats these two stat schools have taught me, and listeners, if you haven't heard our first stat school episode, go back into the Hot Takedown archives and take a listen, is that just how beholden and stuck in the mud baseball still is because of a version of the game that just is not played anymore. We talked about that with plate appearances versus at-bats, and how it was well before all the sorts of strategy around intentional walks and whatever else, and sacrifices and modern tricks of the game. And now we're hearing again, Neil, what I'm hearing from you is that, you know, something as core, what feels as core as earned run average, is still tainted a little bit by, I mean, tainted maybe not be the right verb, but it's just, it's still
it's
stuck.
Influenced.
Yeah, it's influenced by this version of baseball that is no longer. And now we have, you know, Statcast with trails flying across with people.
Yeah, and like if you look at the numbers in the 19th century, even as late as like the 1890s, there were like 3 to 4 errors being committed per game in Major League Baseball.
It's like double A ball,
which is amazing. Like you can't see like Little League games with that many errors sometimes. And now there's about 6/10 of an error committed per game in Major League Baseball, and that's been steadily declining as the years have gone on because you know the equipment is better. The fielders are better, and so there's this conception of the game that really, like you said, no longer applies, but it still seeps into stats that we use all the time without even thinking about
it. Do you think that they should remove the earned part?
Yeah,
I mean, I know there are stats that do that.
Right, and there's been a push by sabermetricians, like once they've kind of sat down and thought about it and said, this is weird that we're doing this earned thing, and it's kind of the scorekeeper's decision as to whether the guy should be penalized or not, that we should really just go run average, and we should say how many runs did the guy allow per 9 innings and not worry about the arbitrariness of, you know, was it earned or not.
Okay, let's get to our Sherpa, who's been waiting in the wings at that second ledge on the mountain that is Stat School. What does he have to tell us about earned run average?
Yeah, so Drew Hutchison, like I had said when we were talking about his win-loss record, which was a stellar 12-2, he, based on his runs allowed, and in this case specifically his earned run average, he really did not deserve that record. He has a 5.06 earned run average, which is very high. In fact, it's 25% higher than the league average. So he should have actually probably been well below 500 in his.
Send him to the minors, that guy.
That's
right.
Save
for his majors.
And I think, it kind of represents progress that the Blue Jays would say, oh, well, you know, this guy is clearly not deserving of this 12-2 record, and we're going to judge him with, you know, kind of a more coldly analytical approach and not think about does he have the will to win these games and say, oh, it's just run support. But at the same time, I think we'll talk about later that even the 5.06 ERA doesn't give you perhaps the full picture of how well he's pitched.
Well, you were saying earlier about how, well, he's getting so much run support and he's giving up a lot of runs, and, you know, some people will defend him by saying that if you have a lot of runs on the board, then maybe you're not as... You're pitching to the score. I mean, you do see that with teams in a lot of different sports when you are ahead, just human tendency to let up a little bit. I guess I'm wondering, is there any space for that? Like, if he is getting a lot of run support, maybe part of it is an element of, like, focus or playing with a lead.
Yeah, I think so. In the NBA, like you're alluding to, there is a demonstrable effect where teams that are up tend to underplay relative to how you would expect them to play, depending on how big the lead is. And then once it shrinks down and it kind of becomes more, you know, like they have to start flipping on the switch again, then they play to their talent level. So in a sport like basketball, that's been shown. But I think in baseball, to the extent that such an effect actually exists, that it just gets dwarfed by how much randomness. And we talked about how, you know, pitchers are very inconsistent. And we'll talk about this a little bit more later about just how little control the pitchers actually have over, you know, how many runs they allow, how many hits they allow, things like that, where I'm sure if you were able to break it down at, like, the most granular level, you would actually see some effect like that. But I think for all intents and purposes, the studies that have shown, like, there really isn't, effectively isn't a pitching to the score effect have just said, like, if there is, it's so small compared to the randomness of pitching in general that we can't even detect it. So we may as well just treat it like it doesn't exist.
I understand, Statman.
Okay. So, just for the final open book exam.
Rubber stamp of approval.
Hutchison, great in wins.
Great record.
Awful in ERA.
Bad ERA.
Doesn't deserve to be in the minors.
Does deserve to be in the minors.
Look at that. Kate's on it. Give her that stamp of approval.
I want it.
That's right. Gold star.
Get down to the minors.
All right. Here's the biggest haul. Statman. To the pinnacle.
Yes.
Stage 3.
I need some trail mix.
Some gorp.
Gorp.
What is the stat?
So the third stat that we wanted to talk about was, it's really kind of a family of stats, but the most prominent.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah,
family
adorable.
Of stats.
Yeah, it's really
hiking with the fam.
Lovely little,
nuclear
yeah,
family.
We're hiking to the top of the mountain with his family, and it's called Fielding Independent Pitching, or FIP. FIP. And you'll see that on, we mentioned Fangraphs, which we go to a lot when we're looking up baseball stats, and you can find that stat there. And it's, it stands for Fielding Independent Pitching, which sort of is the next evolution. And it's an evolution that really only happened in the last 14 or so years of taking ERA, but then also saying, well, how much of that is the pitcher himself and how much of that is the defense behind him? And can we actually parse those out? And going to what the Bill James, you know, theory from the 80s and even into the 90s was, we can't really parse that out, or that's a problem to be left to future generations, and it's not something that, you know, we're equipped to deal with right now. But the breakthrough happened in like 2000 or 2001 when a guy named Voros McCracken, who was like a paralegal, I think.
Did he know Old Hoss?
Yeah, he may have known Old Hoss.
Descendant.
he probably was not as fond or impressed with Old Hoss's record as people in the 1880s were, because he, I think he was like a fantasy baseball player who's trying to figure out, like, he noticed that Pedro Martinez 1 year had an amazing earned run average and also really was good at, like, suppressing hits. Like, people didn't have a good batting average off him. And then the very next year, when you took away, you know, home runs and you only looked at the balls that were put in play against Pedro, even though he still had a great earned run average because he was striking people out, he wasn't walking anyone, he had one of the worst batting averages allowed on those balls in play. And the guy looked at, like, Greg Maddux, also found years in which, like, he was either really great, but then the next year he was really bad at this one stat. And there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. Like, the same pitchers weren't good at it from year to year. Pitchers that you think of as being, like, Hall of Famers, all-time legends, weren't consistently good at this. And he was like, what is going on here? It doesn't make any sense. And I'm trying to predict, you know, how well these pitchers will do for my fantasy league or whatever. So he started digging into it and looked at the historical numbers, and he came to this bizarre conclusion that basically once a pitcher puts a ball in play or has the ball put in play against him, and that means, you know, doesn't strike the guy out, doesn't walk him, and doesn't give up a home run, that he has no control over whether it falls in for a hit or not, which was mind-blowing. You want to talk about mind-blowing. That, like, at the time, the thought that, you know, there was this idea that pitchers who were really good, like Pedro, could induce weak contact mm-hmm. on balls that got put in play against them, in addition to the great performance on balls that weren't in play. And this guy, McCracken, who was just an amateur, you know, his first article about this was published at Baseball Prospectus, but before that, he was kind of an unknown. And even Bill James was like, looking back after reading this article, said, I can't believe we didn't see this a decade ago.
Do, like, you know where you were when you read this article?
I don't
the
believe...
way you speak of it, it's sort of like that kind of moment.
I think I was of the generation that kind of came after that, but I bet our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver, could absolutely tell you where he was when he read it, because he was writing for Baseball Prospectus at the same time, and it was this, I kid you not, it was a watershed moment for baseball analysis.
Okay, so fielding, what goes into fielding independent pitching then? Is it what I hear some people sometimes say, the three true outcomes?
Yeah, exactly.
Strikeouts, home runs, and walks?
Yeah, when you just look at FIP as constructed at Fangraphs.
So there are different ways to construct FIP?
There's different ways to construct defense independent pitching stats, and that's what DIPS is. DIPS and FIP. DIPS is the class of stats, and Voros McCracken himself kind of came up with that stat. And the original version of it had, you know, like various different weights for things like, you know, contact rates and things like that. But FIP was invented by a guy who pseudonymically goes by Tango Tiger or Tom Tango, and he sort of simplified it and was like,
maybe
"What's
he knows
the
old
simplest?"
Hoss.
Yeah, maybe he does. The simplest form of that we can kind of use to represent a pitcher's performance that doesn't involve the fielders just looks at home runs and walks and also hit by pitch.
So this then
would
incentivize pitchers who can strike a lot of guys out. Sorry, not incentivize, but it would treat pitchers who don't let
the ball go into play.
Right.
Who
let the ball go into play
and have great defenses
in a good way. You're not going to get credit for the defense.
Way.
No, so that's the whole point, is it takes away all of the things that a pitcher's interacted or involved in that in any way, shape, or form the defense has control over. So, you know, a double into the gap or a ground ball out. All of those things, FIP treats it like it never happened as far as the pitcher's concerned. The whole credit for that goes entirely to the defense behind him. Whether they turn it into an out or whether it falls in for a hit is the responsibility of the defense. The only thing a pitcher can control under FIP is, did he give up a home run, did he walk a guy, or did he strike a guy out? So you're incentivized not necessarily to not put the ball in play, because two of the three things that involve not putting the ball in play are actually bad for you, right? The home runs and the walks. But it definitely like hones in on strikeouts versus walks. Do you control the plate? Mm-hmm. Because those are the things that tend to be persistent across time for pitchers that they actually do show control over.
Okay, two questions. One, at some point in this podcast, we interviewed a guy from Baseball Prospectus, and we talked about deserved runs allowed, which is similar but a little different. Do you remember? So how is that different than FIP?
So that's one of those stats that sort of takes it to an even greater level within.
There's
the,
a phase four.
Yeah, this might be the phase four of this stat, but
I only brought enough trail mix.
I know, right?
For three phases.
We won't go to phase four necessarily yet, but just to kind of talk about that DRA stat and some of the other ones that you'll hear, like Sierra, which stands for Skills Independent ERA. Those numbers take the concepts of FIP, but then they also say, well, some pitchers do show some ability to control if you start looking at, like, do they give up a lot of line drives? Those types of pitchers.
Exit velocity is something we've written about
exit
at 538.
Velocity,
some
exactly.
pitchers can make the ball come slower off a bat, right. And we know that fast off the bat yields more base hits.
Right, and with more granularity of data, when Voros McCracken was looking at this, all he had was the basic like back of the baseball card stats. Now we have more stats. We have pitch FX. We have things like that where you actually can dig down deeper. And it turns out that the idea that pitchers have no control over balls, the outcomes of balls in play against them, is not totally true. It's true in the vast majority of cases. Knuckleballers, for instance, can consistently induce weak contact, and they allow lower batting averages on balls in play. And there are other things like FIP includes home runs, but it doesn't. There's a skill aspect in that, but there's also a luck aspect where you really want to be measuring: does a guy give up hard contact? Does he give up a lot of fly balls? Mm-hmm. And so something like DRA takes a rate of fly balls allowed by a pitcher and says, We recognize that the number of home runs per fly ball that you give up is also kind of a matter of luck, so we will make an adjustment to your FIP for that.
Okay, so that answers both my questions, actually. Let's get to our Sherpa. Mm-hmm. Is the Sherpa escorting Old Hoss maybe up the mountain?
And are we riding Old Hoss? Tiger or the
That's
Tiger?
Right.
Oh,
Tango Tiger.
You got to watch
Tango
out tiger. For some tigers on that mountain.
Yeah. No, careful.
So, okay, so Hutchison, good in wins. Bad in ERA.
That's right.
What? Let's predict then.
Yeah.
Can Chad and I guess?
Love it.
Please do.
What his?
So actually, can we hear how many where he is strikeout wise compared to the league? Do you have that in hand?
And also, I haven't yet gathered what that number even would look like.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, what's a league average FIP?
So FIP is actually structured to be on the same scale as earned run average.
Okay.
So the league average and earned run average, which is typically around, four or lower than that in recent years, that is the same league average by definition, because they kind of scale it that way at Fangraphs, where they add a constant onto it to make
okay,
it
so
add
to
up.
Me, a low 3, high 2 ERA is really good.
Right.
It's good. And so,
and there's a consistency between FIP and ERA.
Right. So we said the Hutchison's ERA was
5.0.
It's like 5.1.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he has a bad ERA. Therefore, like statistically, I would assume he had a bad FIP after listening.
Unless he's
to
a high strikeout pitcher.
Right. But the win loss were thrown out because we've already doesn't matter.
Will doesn't count with
doesn't
FIP.
Count.
This is Will independent pitcher.
But I would think if his FIP was really good, he wouldn't be in the minors right now. So I'm going to use that piece of info that I have. I bet his FIP is 5.3.
Higher than his ERA.
Higher
you
than
think.
His ERA. Ooh.
It's hard to know without the number of strikeouts. I think.
If we had all the
Blue
data.
Jays,
could,
right. So
you
the
could
Blue,
just compute.
Yeah.
Blue Jays play in a park that's pretty big, if I remember correctly. Don't they let the turf grow or something, so the ball's slow
in
the infield or something?
Or
I'm going to say lower than his ERA. I'm going to say a 4.6 FIP.
Okay. So Hutchison's actual FIP keeping in mind that, yeah, right, that the league average is somewhere around like 3.5 or 4. In this case, probably in his park, it would be exactly 4.
Do they have is one of the FIP family yeah. something that takes in ballpark effect?
That's right. Yeah,
is that FIP plus or XFIP or
it's
XFIP plus?
FIP minus.
Come on,
stop it.
But we'll talk about that in a second. So his Hutchison's FIP is 3.96.
What?
That guy's great. Bring him back from the minors.
He's 12-2 with a 3.96
FIP.
Can we trade him to the Mets?
That's right. Well, talking about the comparison to the league average, we talked about work plus. It was plus because it adjusted for park and league, and a higher score was better, and it was centered around 100. 100 was the league average. Well, at Fangraphs, they have the FIP equivalent of that is not FIP plus. It's actually FIP minus because it's better to allow fewer runs. So so they've scaled it so that like the offensive stat, you score more runs, so it's better to have a higher work plus. But in the case of FIP minus, it's better to have a lower one. And in the case of Hutchison, he has a 98 FIP minus. So he's allowing 2%
better than league
fewer
average.
Runs than the league average given his park and the league that he faced off against. So I think you could make the case that Hutchison, if given enough time, that 5.06 ERA, which is driven because he's allowing a hit on 34% of the balls that
That's
are put
good.
In play against him, and the league average is 30%, that eventually, if
so
given enough
unlucky.
Time,
despite
he's
being
been unlucky,
lucky in wins, he's unlucky
exactly.
in. Hits
exactly,
and that's why
balls
his
put in play are turning in hits more frequently than the
exactly.
league average.
Exactly,
and that's
means,
why his FIP minus is.
But he doesn't control that.
No,
mostly
it's a combination of luck and the quality of the defense behind him. And the quality of the defense can really change depending on who's starting, even on the same team, because sometimes the balls are hit in positions where the
fielders, there's not as much range or something.
Or the fielders are just right there, or they've been shifted correctly. There's just a wide variance over what kind of defensive support. In addition to, we talked about run support, this sort of tries to take into account defensive support, and it can really change for pitchers and really distort their ERA, even if they're pitching at the same level of quality.
Okay.
Keep your head up, Drew.
So,
that's right.
So really good pitchers are probably going to be really good in all three.
Yeah, I think that's
really bad.
That's
pitchers
about
are
correct.
Are maybe going to be really bad in all three, maybe not.
Yeah, especially like given enough time, you would expect your ERA to match your FIP, and you would expect your win loss record to be sort of suggestive mm-hmm. of what those other two should be.
But the
also.
The problem is that we're dealing with 162 game seasons, and so
yeah,
it's
and you
not
really
a huge
only
sample.
Get 30-ish. Starts
so, but are players' career FIPs and ERAs often match?
Yeah, and in fact, there's a certain point where in the short term, it's probably better to look at FIP if you want to know how good a guy is, especially
season.
How well he'll pitch. Yeah, how good he's been this season and how well he'll pitch in the future. You want to look at FIP instead of ERA in the short term because it's naturally going to be subject to less variance. There's less noise being poured into it. The defense is not tainting it. So you're getting
Liquid
a better
noise.
Picture of how good
boring
noise.
Right. How good a pitcher is. But then after 5 years or especially after a whole career, you will see the pitchers that do have some ability to suppress balls in play or hits on balls in play, like a Greg Maddux, who allowed a below 300 batting average.
He was also
on
a fabulous fielder.
Oh, he's a fantastic fielder.
Yeah, so how
himself.
Do you take into account
his own fielding.
His own fielding and FIP?
Well, in there we have to talk about a stat that is beyond the scope, and it's called wins above replacement.
Play him out, Jody. Play him out.
But we'll talk about that next time. So that really is instructive of kind of the differences and what goes into the difference if you have a win-loss record that's not borne out by your earned run average, and then also if your FIP doesn't line up particularly with your ERA.
Okay. I feel like I learned something. Kate, you feeling good?
I feel really good.
Okay. I feel better than I did at the end of the batting.
No.
That's cool.
I hope Neil can't hear me. At the end of the batting when I was slightly still confused because it was so intricate, mm-hmm. some of like the work plus. Mm-hmm. I had it, but this pitching stuff I feel really good
about.
Wow,
so this might be the first audience that actually kind of had a better time understanding the FIP, the wins and losses to ERA to FIP transition than the average to OPS to work plus.
It's because of the forefathers,
the
Old Hoss, Voros,
Team Tiger.
And Tango Tiger. They are,
I just call
and
it
now
Statman,
Neil, you've ascended into their
That's
ranks.
Right.
It's family.
We've summited.
Okay, let's leave it there until the next stat school, which maybe won't be on baseball. Maybe it'll be on another sport. Thanks to Kate Fagan, as always. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Chad.
Neil Payne, the stat, Neil Statman Payne.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks to our Sherpa.
Drew Hutchison.
Drew Hutchison. Thank you. Our podcast producer is Jody Avergan. He has his own podcast called What's the Point? You can find on iTunes. It's conversations around data and how it's affecting our lives. Our video producer is Ryan Antel. We get production assistance from Jordan Shulkin. You can email us at podcasts@538.com. We'd love to hear what you think. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Downcast, all sorts of other apps. We're also on iTunes. You can subscribe at itunes.com/538. While you're there, be sure to review and rate the show. It helps others discover the program. Our theme song is by Mystery Mansion. I'm Chadwick Matlin. Thanks for listening.